Great, thank you. Hi, everybody. We're going to get started now. Let me just remind everybody where we were. And if I have made a mistake about exactly where we were, please correct me. We had finished last week going through the long piece from Rut Rabba, right? We had that long piece from Rut Rabba with, Goshi Halom, concentrating on Pasuk Yudalit of Perek Bet. And we have two sessions counting today, so I have to get, start booking over here so we get a little bit further faster. But we worked through those two, we worked through that long piece, and the upshot of it was that and I think it can be extended perhaps to the whole book, that what is happening here is something that is going to have profound implications for Jewish history and for human history. And so the encounter between Ruth and Boaz is not a simple, it's not a simple matter. We were still left with our question of, okay, why doesn't Boaz do more? That's and we will Bezrat Hashem answer that question this week. Let me just share the screen with you. Lehakireni. Okay, so we are now in Pasuk Yudalid, right here. Okay. This is where we left off before we took our long excursion through the Midrash, to the Gemara Yevamot, and elsewhere. And we're going to start from here. Let me just find my thingy, my annotator. Come on. Okay. I don't know why I think if I talk to the computer, it will cooperate better, but there's some stubborn part of me that thinks it will work better if I talk to it. I talk to my washing machine too. It has not done me much good. Okay. Vayomer la Boaz le'et ha'ochel, and Boaz said to her at the time of eating, Goshi halom, draw hither or approach hither, v'achalt min ha'lechem, and eat of the food, v'tavat pitech b'chometz, and dip your bread in the vinegar, v'teshev mitzat ha'kotzrim, and she sat at the side of the reapers, v'yitzbat la'kali, and he pinched out for her some parched grain, v'tochal v'tisba v'totar, and she ate, and she was full, and she left over. Okay, but laket, and she got up to glean. Vayitzav Boaz et na'arav lemor, and Boaz said to his servant, saying, "Gam ben ha'omarim telaket velo tachlimuha." Also among the sheaves, she can glean, and don't embarrass her. What Boaz is doing here is, again, you can imagine that a field in full harvest is going to be very, very busy, very, very busy place, especially with all sorts of people on the field who are gleaning the leftovers. And if it's a big field and there are a lot of people reaping, there are also going to be a lot of people gleaning. And what Boaz wants, what was properly and fairly done was that there were servants who were guarding, for example, already, packaged or sheaved wheat, so because that's appropriate. It doesn't belong to the gleaners. So he was basically saying to servants, let her go wherever she wants. Don't embarrass her. If she sees something that she wants to pick up, just let her pick it up. Okay. Again, what is apparent here is there's Boaz is approaching the helping of Ruth and Naomi indirectly. Okay. And also he's telling them to sort of let drop from the stacks of wheat, vazavtem, and leave them, and let her pick them up and do not rebuke her. As there were rules about what the gleaners could pick up, he's basically asking his servants or telling his servants to accidentally on purpose drop extra grain where Ruth can pick it up. Okay, again, an indirect, he's helping her indirectly. She gathered in the field ad ha'arev until the evening. Vatachbot et asher liketa, and she sort of, put together all that she had gathered by hike efa seorim, and it was about an efa of barley. Now, I don't know what the equivalent measure is, but for one woman picking up individual stalks, it's a huge amount of grain. She's just amassed a huge amount of grain. Okay. Vatisama tavoha il. And she picked it up and she came to the city. And her mother-in-law saw that which she had gleaned. And Ruth took out. And she gave her what she had left over from her being full at the meal, right? She had grain from the portion that Boaz gave her. And her mother-in-law said to her, where did you gather today? Ma'ana asit, and where did you do? Where did you do this, this enormous, where did you get all this? Yehi makirech baruch. May the one who recognized you be blessed. And here once again, we have the motif of recognition. What is obvious to Nomi here? It is obvious to Nomi that someone was helping Ruth. A makil, somebody who recognized her, presumably recognized her fine qualities or recognized her need or recognized both, right? And she, without knowing who she is speaking about, she calls him the one who recognizes Ruth, okay? Remember, if we say that part of the story of Megillat Ruth is what is going on with Ruth, the stranger, how does she become part of this society? How does she find her identity here? How does she go from being a Moaviyah and a Nochriyah, a Moabite woman and a stranger? How does she become part? Somebody recognized her. And by the way, it's implicit, not only implicit, it's almost explicit in what she asks. Boaz, why are you being so nice to me? I'm a stranger. And he says, because I know what you did for your mother-in-law. He did recognize her. He did see her fine qualities. And she told her mother-in-law, the one with whom she had done. We'll come back to this in a minute. Okay. She said, the name of the man with whom I did today is Boaz. Okay. And here, Ruth Rabba says that more than the owner gives to the pauper gives to the owner. She is doing for him. She's giving him the merit of performing the mitzvah of tzedakah. Okay. And Pasuk Chav, Vatomer Naomi lekalata, and Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, and here again, it's sort of, interesting. If you start in Pasuk Yud Chet, what is emphasized here in verse 18, from verse 18 onward, is the fact that it's a mother-in-law, daughter-in-law relationship, right? So she came to the city and her mother-in-law saw, right here, mother-in-law saw what she had gathered. And her mother-in-law said, where did you gather? And she told her mother-in-law, right? And here again, and Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. What's the emphasis here on the relationships? Well, this is, Naomi is gauging how Ruth is received because she is hoping that Ruth will be a way of, she will find a way to, insert Ruth into society, but also to redeem them, to redeem the fields, which we're going to talk about in the next parak. Okay, so Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, Baruch hu la'Hashem asher lo azav chasdo et achayim et hamitim. Blessed is he, meaning blessed is Boaz to Hashem, who has not abandoned his kindness with the living and the dead. God has not abandoned his kindness. But Tomer la Naomi, Karov lanu ha'ish, migo'aleinu hu. And Naomi said to her, the man is our relative. He is one of our redeemers. He is of our redeemers. Okay? Now, I just want you to notice the sentence structure here. Some of you have studied with me before will recognize this. This vayomer vayomer that we have here, vatomer vatomer la. We talked about this before. Chazal say whenever you have a repetition of vayomer vayomer vatomer vatomer, whatever it is. Oh, okay, let's put it this way. The structure of the sentence would be something like this. Vatomer Naomi leRut. Naomi said to Ruth. Vatomer Ruth leNaomi. And Ruth said to Naomi. Vatomer Naomi leRut. And Naomi said to Ruth. Meaning, when you have the word vayomer or vatomer or vayidaber, right, a word indicating speech, you will only have that word repeated if there is an intervening speaker or an intervening action. When you get this, where it says, Vatomer Naomi lekalata, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, and nothing, nobody speaks in between, there's no intervening action, Vatomer la Naomi, and Naomi said to her, this has to be expounded. Do you remember this? Have we talked about this before? Okay. So what's going on over here? Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, maybe blessed Hashem who has not abandoned his kindness with the living and the dead. And Ruth says, huh? Right? She doesn't, you know, she doesn't understand why Naomi is so exhilarated and so enthusiastic and excited about this. She is a Moabiyah. It doesn't occur to her what the implications of the relationship might be, or Boaz, who Boaz is to her, or anything like that. And then it's Naomi to explain in the absence of Ruth's understanding. Naomi says he's a relative of ours. He is one of the people who can redeem our fields. Okay. Vatomer Ruth HaMoaviyah, and Ruth HaMoaviyah said, Gam ki amar la'im hanarim asher li tidbakin. Also, he said, you will cleave to my servants. Adim kilu et kol hakatir asher li, until they finish all of my glean, all of my reaping. Vatomer Naomi el Ruth kalata, and Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, Tov biti, good, my daughter, ki tetzim na'arotav, that you should go out with his maidservants, v'lo yifgu'u bach b'sada achel, and they won't bother you in another field. What's this Moabiyah doing here? And she said, and Ruth the Moabite said, so here, in Ruth Rabbah it says, and it's very gentle and beautiful the way that Naomi corrects her. Ruth says to Naomi, he also told me to cleave to his servants, to stick around with his servants, meaning he gave me permission to be next to his servants. And Naomi says to her daughter-in-law, that's that word kalata again, to her daughter-in-law, it is good if you go with his maidservants. And she's called a Moabiyah here because she didn't, the standards of modesty for a Moabite field are not the standards of modesty for a Judean field. And very gently, Naomi corrects her. She knows that Boaz did not tell Ruth to stick around with his male servants, only with his female servants. So she sort of corrects her here. Vatidbak v'na'arot Boaz alaket, and she cleaved to the maid servants of Boaz to glean, ad klot ketzir ha'sorim u'ketzir ha'chitim, until the end of the barley harvest and the end of the wheat harvest, vatashev et chamota, and she lived with her mother-in-law. Now, this time marker, I think, is very, very important here. Hang on, let me just check. No, we did all this. Okay. This time marker is kind of important here. Because what are we talking about when we talk about from the end of the barley harvest or from the end of the barley harvest to the end of the wheat harvest? We're talking about this period between Pesach and Shavuot, basically, right? That's the period that we're in here. It's significant for a number of reasons. Let's say it's about 2 months, 3 months, depending on the seasons and how things are, you know, the weather and the way the crops are going and stuff like that. It's a significant period of time, but it's a delimited period of time. It is the Navi's way, or Shmuel, the author of Ruth, does not write it as a Navi, but he's still reminding us that this is the period of Kabbalat HaTorah, right? Of the receiving of the Torah. If you think about it, Ruth has had her Yitziat Mitzrayim. She has had her exodus from Egypt, or in her case, her exodus from Moab, right? She leaves Moab. And somewhere from the point of leaving Moab till her personal full, you know, full acceptance in the community, she undergoes this process of a kind of personal Kabbalat HaTorah, personal reception or receiving of the Torah. And that's related also to the movement from barley to wheat. And it's reflected in the Korbanot, right? Barley is the food of animals. Wheat is the food of people, right? It was barley was not was something you only ate if you had to eat barley, but otherwise people eat wheat. The offering of the Omer was raw stalks of barley were brought, and the offering of the Atzeret of the end of Sfirat HaOmer, the end of the counting up to Matan Torah, was baked loaves of bread. And it's a movement from the rough, the coarse, to the more refined, right? That's the you know, the korbanot, the sacrifices here reflect the process that the Jewish people is supposed to undergo. And this also is the process that Ruth, in a different sort of way, is also going to undergo. It also means that this is a period of time within which, right, she's going day in, day out to glean in Boaz's field, which means she's very much in Boaz's jurisdiction, or jurisdiction is the wrong word. Nochachut, how would you say? Presence is the wrong word either. She's very, very much visible, right, to Boaz, right? She's there in his field. He is discreetly having his servants drop extra food for her. He is offering her meals. He's greeting her kindly, and he is not doing anything beyond that, right? And Nomi is waiting for something to happen. Her sense of relief that Ruth has found her way to Boaz's field means she has a lot of faith in Boaz, and yet nothing is happening here. So this is where we come to the next parak. Okay. Now, before we look at the next parak, I just want to go over something with you because there is, I think, a fairly widespread misconception. It's just a short section from the Malbim on Sefer Dvarim on the Mitzvah of Yibum. There is a sort of widespread misconception that there's something like Yibum in this story. Right, there's something everybody knows what Yibum is here, right? Yibum is a levirate marriage. If a man dies without children, his brother is obligated to marry a surviving brother, right? And the child that is born out of the first sexual intercourse between widow and brother-in-law belongs, so to speak, to the dead brother. We're all familiar with this mitzvah. Okay, a lot of people think that the issue at stake here is something like Yibum, right? Okay, so here's where we have to clarify. And the reason I've taken this selection from the Malbim is because in his Perusha Torah, what the Malbim does is he sort of detangles the halachic mitzvah of Yibum in the Torah, after Matan Torah, about a brother marrying the sister-in-law or the widowed sister-in-law of a brother who died without children. That's halachic Yibum. And the story of Yehuda and Tamar. and the story of Boaz and Ruth. Okay, and to explain what this is, he gives sort of two introductions here. I strongly suggest you read the whole piece, which, as I said, is in the Malbim's Perush HaTorah. The Malbim is a late Acharon, 19th century, and he thinks in terms he writes very much in the style of a modern writer. Okay, so let's see what happens here. He starts with a pasuk, Yeshvu. Let me read the pasuk. It's Dvarim Chafhei pasukei. We're not going to read the whole thing because we're not learning Yibum. Fascinating though that may be. Ki yeshvu achim yachdav umet achad mehem uben enlo. Okay, if two brothers live together and one of them dies and he has no children, the wife of the dead man doesn't go out. She does Yibum with her brother-in-law. Okay, Inyan haYibum huskar b'Maaseh v'Tamar. The topic of Yibum is mentioned in the story of Er and Tamar. Er is the oldest son of Yehuda. V'kan, here in Sefer Dvarim, which is where he's writing his commentary, uv'Inyan Boaz v'Rut, and in the story of Boaz and Rut, in the matter of Boaz and Rut. Uv'chol echad me'ashlosha ba ba'ofen acher. And in each of these three cases, it comes about in a different manner, or it's expressed in a different manner. V'yitba'er al pi shtei hakdamot. We're only going to do the first background information. Again, I strongly suggest you read it yourselves. Aleph. There are two sort of introductions that I need to give to you for you to understand what's going on here. Aleph. She'inyan ha'yibum hu al shnei panim. The matter of yibum is expressed in two ways. Okay, the concept of yibum. I'm paraphrasing here, but that's what he means. The concept of yibum is expressed in two ways. Ha'echad, kishetelet zera mehayabam v'hazera yechashev lahamet. In a case where a child is born from the brother-in-law, and the child is considered to belong to the dead man, right? In other words, this idea is the brother, so to speak, restores his brother's line of succession, right? Of line of continuation. The Zeikare, and this is called Hakamat Shem B'Yisrael, establishing a name in Israel. He's drawing from the psukim in Dvarim. He's drawing from the verses in Deuteronomy, which talk about this mitzvah. The idea of establishing a name in Israel, v'lo yimacheh shmo mi'Yisrael, and that his name not be wiped out in Israel. And as the purpose of the mitzvah of Yibum is that the brother's name not be forgotten. V'hasheni, and the second aspect of Yibum, or the second concept in Yibum, She'eshet hamet tihiye lo li'isha, that the dead man's wife becomes the brother-in-law's wife. V'gam nachalat hamet tihiye lo, and also the dead brother's portion of land, inherited land, will be the living brother's. V'nikra shem hamet al nachalato, and the name of the dead man will be accounted to the name. The name of the dead man will be called upon his portion of land. Through that which the wife of the dead man, the widow of the dead brother, will be engaged in dealing with the nachala as before. This is called establishing his name on his inheritance, shelo yikaret shmo me'echav u'mishar mekomo, and that his name should not be cut off from his brothers and the gates of his place. Okay? V'hevdel b'nehem, and the difference between these two aspects of Yibum is, ki hakamat shem b'zera hu tachlit ha'mechuvan b'mitzvat Yibum. The idea of having the name of the brother associated with the living child, that is the intended purpose of the mitzvah of Yibum. The connection to the land is a secondary purpose or secondary aspect. He goes on, and notice here there's an ellipsis. I skipped a lot because we really are only dealing with this in connection with Boaz and Ruth. But one of the things that he says is that it only has application, he says that establishing someone's name on his land is because of the tremendous sanctity of Eretz Yisrael, the Kedushat Eretz Yisrael, that even having your name linked to a piece of land in Eretz Yisrael is a way of memorializing or keeping alive a person's memory in the minds of his people. And he says that's why it's connected to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, let me just stop here for a second. Is that clear, everybody with me? Yeah, the main purpose of Yibam is a baby, a child who will be a living child who will be linked with the dead man's name, or yeah, will be considered almost like his child. Okay, and now we come to Boaz. Okay, then what he talks about is Yibam, and then he talks about Yehuda and Tamar, and now he talks about Boaz and Ruth. Uvinyan Boaz v'Ruth she'en shem makom la'akamat zera. In the story of Boaz and Ruth, where there is no place for the concept of establishing the name of the dead man on a child or through a child, if you're not muted, please mute because I'm getting feedback, playback here. Okay. Oh, he does say it here. And only establishing the name of the dead man on his portion of Eretz Yisrael. The sanctity of Eretz Yisrael is so great. Even if only his name is called upon his inheritance, there is still a remnant for the dead person. And the whole idea of redeeming a field, a portion of the person, the dead man's field, which is talked about with respect to relatives, not brothers, but other relatives. Is so that his name not be wiped out from the field of his inheritance, because his soul is sanctified with the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. As she says, Ufarasta Ruth, as in the parak we're about to read, says to Boaz, you will spread the corner of your garment over your maidservant, ki goelata, because you are a redeemer. Omnam, and similarly, he says, Omnam ki goel anochi. He says, indeed, I am a redeemer, but there's a redeemer who is ahead of me in line. Vod kama pa'amim nizkar b'inyan hazeh shem geula, and in several other places, this idea is mentioned with respect, was called redemption, she'ikare, ikara asteh achuzah. Because the main thrust of redemption is talking about redeeming ancestral land, a field that is someone's property. The women, when they said, when Ruth has a baby, they say Yulad ben leNaomi, a child was born to Naomi. They don't say a child was born to Mahlon. Mahlon was Ruth's husband. It says, Vayikach Boaz et Rut v'atilo and Boaz took Ruth, and she was him to him a wife, and he had relations with her. Shahakicha v'tihi lo al hachupa, because the taking is talking about marriage, and that she becomes his after the chupa. And afterwards, he has relations with her like any other a regular marriage, which is different because there's no marriage ceremony in Yibum. And that was the neighbors said, a son was born to Naomi. Ubishvil Shaita Lola Omenet. That was because she took care of him. Okay, so we're gonna stop here and just gonna, any questions before we go on? It's clear we're not talking about any kind of Yibum, but we are yeah, there was a question.
May I ask about, why does Malbim say that there is not a Kamachem be Israel? Machlon died without child.
That's right. There is no Hakamachem. It can't be fixed. There's no surviving brother. Yibum is only with a brother. Yibum, the birth of it is only with the brother. That's why I brought this Malbim. A lot of people think that what goes, what is happening.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Okay, so that's why. I took the moment. Okay, let's go back now to the parak. Yes, one more question, and then we're going back to the parak. Yeah.
Okay, could you specify again the Geulat Ha'adama? What happened when Naomi came home? She had no ownership of the land?
No, she has no ownership. Okay, let me, quick rundown.
Wait a minute, so this is simply boy meets girl seduction?
No. No, I think I've tried to make that clear all along. We'll talk about that in a minute. Let's put it this way. If Boaz were interested in Ruth and it was that simple, he could have approached her in the field. He doesn't do that. Okay. Let me just see if I can explain it again. Okay. Land is entailed upon the male line, just like Lahavdil in Jane Austen. Right? In other words, land reverts to the male inheritors. If a man dies, his land, his nachala, his portion of land in Eretz Yisrael goes to his male children. If he has female children, but no male children, it goes to his female children. What happens if he dies without children of any kind? It goes to his nearest living male relative. Okay, yes. Now, Elimelech, Machlon, and Kilion all die, right? So it reverts back to one, back a generation. Should I say that again? It'll go back a generation because it'll go back to Elimelech's generation, which means that any of Elimelech's brothers can redeem the field. Nobody wants to redeem the field. It goes down a generation. And one of the nephews can redeem the field. Okay? Now, what the Malbim points out is that in the Psukim about Yibum in Dvarim, which you should read because they're interesting, and the Malbim is also interesting, and read his Perush there, there are two kinds of Hakamat Shem, or establishing the name of a dead man, mentioned there. One is Hakamat Shem Bezera. That is to say, if the widow and brother-in-law perform Yibum and she gets pregnant from that first act of intercourse and she has a child, that child restores the dead brother's name. Okay? You want to call it symbolically, mystically, however you want to say it. The other idea is that when the fields are redeemed, right, by the nearest male relative in line to redeem the fields, if he's married to the wife of the dead man, but I should point out something else here. Ordinarily, can a man marry his brother's widow? No. It's one of the forbidden relationships. You're not allowed to marry your brother's widow, except in a case of Yibum, right? And then you don't actually perform any marriage ceremony. You have the act of Yibum, and then they remain together because the woman becomes his wife legally through Torah, okay? Okay, so let's back up again, okay? How does a widow inherit? How does a widow inherit? Because a widow is not left penniless. There are two ways a widow can inherit. One is she gets regular payments from the husband's estate, right? She makes a claim on the husband's estate, and she gets regular payments from the husband's estate, sort of like alimony or child support or something like that, okay? Or she asks for her ketubah from the estate, right? The money she brought into the marriage, the lump sum she brought into the marriage, she can then take out of the marriage from the estate. That's one of two ways. Nomi has no money because no one is working those fields. There's nowhere to claim anything, right? You understand? Nobody's working those fields. Those fields are lying fallow. Elimelech's land is just sitting around, okay? So she can't claim from her husband's estate, and she can't claim her ketubah because there's no money left. There's nothing left, right? So, okay? All right, let's see what she tries to do for Ruth, okay? So let's go back to the perek. So here we are. All right, so I don't know if I just muddied the water more by teaching you this, Melvin, but it seemed like a good idea at the time. In any event, let's go on over here. Okay. All right, so this period of harvesting has passed, and now we are toward the end of the harvest period. Vatomer la Naomi chamota, and Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, Biti, my daughter, will I not seek for you a resting place, which is another way of talking about a spouse, right? Who will be good to you? Meaning, I want to find you. Am I not looking for you for a spouse who will be good to you? Naomi knows she's not going to live forever. And she also knows that when she is not any longer there, whatever minimal social protection or home she can offer to Ruth will not be there. She's trying to provide for Ruth afterwards. Okay. Vata, I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry. Vata halo boz moda'atanu asher hayitev na'arotav. And now, is it not that Boaz, our relative, that you were with his maidservants? Hinehu zore et goren hasorim halayla. Is he here? He is winnowing grain in the barley silo. Goren is like a threshing floor. That's the word. He's winnowing grain in the threshing floor of the barley tonight. Verachatzt, vasacht, and you will bathe yourself and you will anoint yourself. Vesamt simlotaych alaych. And you will place your clothing upon you. And here it means dress nicely. V'yaradet hagoren, and go down to the threshing floor. Al tivad'i la'ish ad kalato le'chov l'shtot. Do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Now, those of you who are looking at what we're looking at here will notice this kriktiv. If you were reading Megillat Rut from a cloth, from parchment, right? It would say V'yaradeti, and I will go down. But when you read it, you say V'yaradet, and you will go down. You see it? Is that clear? A kriktiv is when it's written one way in the Masoretic text. That's the ktiv. That's the way it's written. The kri is how we read it. So it's written, v'yaradeti, I will go down, but it is pronounced, v'yaradet, and you will go down. Okay? Let's just read one more pasuk, and then we'll see what's going on here. V'hi v'shochvo, and when he lies down, v'yadatet hamakom asher yishkav sham, and you will know the place where he will be lying down there. Uvat v'gilit ma'galotav, and you will come and uncover his feet. V'shachavti, here's another kriktiv. It's written v'shachavti, which means an I will lie down, but we read it as v'shachavt, and you will lie down. V'hu yagid lach et asher ta'asin, and he will tell you what you should do. Okay. One more pasuk, and then we will explain what's going on. But Tomer Eleha, and Ruth said to her, Kol asher tomri elai e'eseh. All that you say to me, I will do. The Eli is not in the written text. It just says, Kol asher tomri e'eseh. Whatever you say, I will do. Okay, let's first sort of figure out what's going on here technically. Ruth is Naomi is asking Ruth to do something highly unconventional and also a very tremendous risk to Ruth. The risk is not, God forbid, that Naomi's afraid that Boaz would rape her or something like that. That's not what's going on over here. But Ruth has gained Boaz's respect. And in fact, by extension, probably the people in the field are starting to get to know her. She's becoming part of the landscape. Perhaps they're starting to accept her. She's no longer so alien. She's certainly not a surprise every time she walks into Boaz's fields. But what's important is Boaz has a lot of respect for her. He says that at the first conversation. He compares her to Avraham Avinu. You did such kind things for your mother-in-law. He has nice things to say to her. Okay. What Naomi wants Ruth to do is to go to the Goren and ask him to marry her. Okay. Why does Naomi do this? Naomi sees that Boaz is not going to make this offer. He's not, he knows he's had ample opportunity to either approach Naomi and ask what's the deal with Ruth, or to approach Ruth directly, and he hasn't done that. And which again leads us back to our question, why not, right? But essentially, Naomi is asking Ruth to risk that hard-earned respect and social capital in an action that could be easily misunderstood as an attempt at seduction, or maybe a blackmail or something like that, right? And she's asking her to take an incredible social risk, which to my mind indicates that she has great trust in the integrity of Boaz, right? Which is, I think, pretty clear. But one thing that is very, very interesting, if you take a look at this, at the language of the Pasuk, okay? Perek Gimel ends by telling us that Ruth gleaned in Boaz's field for 3 months. And then, let's do that again. Okay. And then it says, Vatomer la Naomi Chamota. And her mother-in-law said to her, do you notice the name Ruth doesn't appear here in the first few psukim of the parak at all? Her mother-in-law said to her, she says, I'm looking for a husband for you, right? Here is Boaz, our neighbor that you were with. He's in the threshing floor tonight. Bathe, anoint yourself, put your clothes on. And what's written in the text is that I will go down to the Goren. Even though what she says to her clearly is, and you will go down to the Goren, to the threshing floor. She is Naomi's proxy here. Naomi is not approaching Boaz directly. We might expect Naomi to say, walk over to Boaz's house, knock on the door and say, Boaz, I need to speak to you about Ruth. But she doesn't do that. She sends Ruth, and it's as though she is going down, even though physically, right, it's Ruth who goes down. Don't make yourself known until he finishes eating or drinking. When he lies down, know where he is sleeping and come and uncover his feet. Again, it says, Vishahavti, and I will lie down, Naomi says. Right? No, it's in the, that's what's written in the text, even though it says, and you will lie down, and he will tell you what to do. Vatomer Eleha, and she said to her, again, Ruth's name doesn't appear. It doesn't say, and Ruth said to her. And also, we read the word Eli, it's not written in the text. All that you say, I will do. That's what's written in the text. We read it as all that you say to me, I will do. In the text, it's as though Ruth is not there, right? She is part of, and again here. Vatered HaGoren, she went down to the threshing floor. Again, doesn't say her name. She did all that her mother-in-law commanded her. In these psukim, Ruth just doesn't appear. Right? She has to cancel out her every instinct that is telling her not to do this, and she's acting purely in trust of her mother-in-law. Which leads us back to the question which we raised, and now I'm going to try and answer it. Why doesn't Boaz do more? Why doesn't Boaz do more? Okay. And perhaps to precede that question with another question, when Naomi gets back from Moab, she has a first cousin by birth and a first cousin by marriage. Why doesn't she go to Boaz for help? He wouldn't send her away. Why doesn't she do it? So I would like to suggest that there are two things going on here. I'm not even talking about the whole question of, you know, why does she not approach him about Ruth? I'm talking about when she comes back home, why does she ask him for help? And I think that it's pretty clear that Naomi is ashamed. She's ashamed for having abandoned her people, for having stayed away so long, for coming back in a state of poverty, helplessness, and need. She was accustomed to be a leader in the society, to have her material needs taken care of. She's come back to be at best an object of pity, maybe an object of pity or dislike. And she does not want to go to Boaz. And perhaps Boaz interprets this as, if I help her, if I approach her, I will humiliate her. In other words, it could be he will do whatever he can in whatever sort of, you know, sideways, he'll try and help Ruth. But to have that conversation with Naomi where he goes and he says, look, you need help. Let me help you. Come into my household or whatever. He's not going to do that to her because she has clearly indicated she doesn't want that. Okay. So why doesn't he offer marriage to Ruth? And I think here it is even more understandable. Boaz is 90 years old. He has just buried his wife. He has never had children. And Boaz is very, very conscious of the fact that he's finished, right? He is already at a place in his life where he cannot see himself as marrying a woman much younger than him, with whom he is not going to survive, right? He's going to be leaving her alone for a very long time. He's not likely to be alive much longer. She's much younger. She's 40. He's 90, which means that Ruth, how many years can he give her, right? He is not the redeemer of the land. He's not first in line to redeem the land, right? What can he offer her? Why would she want to marry him? He does not see himself. And again, this is a flaw, right? He should see himself as a person who has something to offer, because what he has to offer her is his social position, right? He has to offer her that that position that he has in the society, and that certainly will prove to be worth a great deal. Though we will see that there are those who think that Boaz died as a punishment for marrying Ruth, right? Remember, we'll see that when we get to Perek Dalet. But it's not so strange that he doesn't take action here. He only takes action after Ruth comes to the Goren. And I think that's what we have to examine now. Why is it that Ruth coming to the Goren ends in his willingness to do this? Okay, so here, I just wanted to show you the Yerushalmi. I should have showed you this earlier. Remember, I pointed out, hang on, let me get that pointer, right? The Yaradati, I will go down, you will go down. Shachavti, I will lie, you will lie. Whatever you say to me, that's not written down. The Yerushalmi says here, V'yaradita goren, And you will go down to the threshing floor. V'yaradati k'tiv. It's written, I will go down. Amra la. Naomi said to her, Zchuti tered imach. My merit will go down with you. Okay, hang on. Okay, so let's go to the actual encounter between them. I want to ask you, while we're reading this, can you think of another story that follows along these lines? I think the answer to this, a story in the Torah, not in Tanakh, but in Torah, that actually follows out this sort of line. Okay. Vayhi b'chatzi halayla, and it was in the middle of the night. That's a redemptive phrase, everybody, right? Like vayhi b'chatzi halayla in Mikilat, in the Haggadah. And it was in the middle of the night. Vayecharad ha'ish, the man trembled. Vayilafet, and he like touched, he like groped. He lies down, right? And there's somebody lying at his feet, and he starts to shake, right? And he gropes with his hand. And here a woman is lying at his feet. And he said, Miat, who are you? And she said, Anochi Rut Amatecha, I am Rut, your handmaiden. And you will spread the garment, the corner of your garment over your handmaiden, which is a euphemism for marriage, kigo elata, because you are a redeemer. Vayomer, and he said, brucha ad la Hashem biti, blessed are you to Hashem, what does he call her here? My daughter. Heitav chastech acharon min harishon, your last kindness was better than your first. The first kindness was taking care of the burial of her husband. Not to go after the young men, whether poor or rich. Sorry. Va'atabiti, and now my daughter, Al Tiri, do not be afraid. Kol Asher Tomri Eeselach, whatever you say, I will do for you. Kiodea kol shar ami ki eshet chayil at. Because all of the gate of my people know that you are a brave woman. Vata, and now, ki omnam ki im goel anochi, although I am a redeemer, v'gam yesh goel karov mimeni, there is a redeemer who is closer than me. Lini halayla, lie here tonight, v'haya baboker, and it will be in the morning, im yigalech, Tov, if he will redeem you, good. Tov yigal, he will redeem well. I'm sorry, let me read that again. Vaya bavoker imigalech tov yigal. If he redeems you, it will be good. V'im lo yachpotz v'galech, and if he does not want to redeem you, ugaaltich anochi chay Hashem, I will redeem you by the life of Hashem, shichvi ad haboker. Lie here till the morning. It's dangerous. It's dangerous for to go back in the dark. Please mute yourself if you are not muted. Now there are a number of interesting clues here. First of all, this is not such a romantic encounter because he calls her BT twice. Okay, it's not the kind of thing a man who is being seduced or trying to seduce is going to say. But he's also saying, I see that you are performing a tremendous act of kindness because I'm a very old man and you could have married a younger man, right? You did not go looking for a younger husband, right? Whether rich or poor. So a woman in the normal way of the world looks for a man of her own age, or a young woman looks for a young man, right? She doesn't go to an old man. No young woman wants to marry an old man. And he sees that what she's doing is he calls her an eshet chayil, a brave woman. Naomi has succeeded. What has Naomi done here? Naomi, rather than approach Boaz directly, approach Boaz directly and get a refusal, because what will Boaz say? Naomi, I know you think you're doing her a favor, but I'm not long for this world. I never had children. Maybe I can't have children. Don't do this to this woman. And when it comes to the redeeming of the land, you have to ask the redeemer. You have to ask Ploni Almoni, right? There's a, you know, I'm not the person. This isn't my job. If you want, I'll set up a meeting with you too. I'll come with you. But what does Naomi say? She takes Ruth and asks her to make a brave step, right? To do something very brave. And faced with that bravery in this woman, Boaz responds with bravery of his own, with an extra effort of his own. Now, what's interesting here is that, wait, just one more point I wanted to make. I'm going to talk about the redemption in a minute. Oh, what's the story, everybody? What story should this remind you of? In the Torah.
Yehuda and Tamar.
No, not, yes, there are parallels to Yehuda and Tamar, but that's not what I'm thinking of. No.
Okay. Yitzchak and the Yaakov stealing the bracha?
Absolutely. Ding, ding, ding. Give that woman a prize. Yes. What do we have here? We have a man who is effectively blind. He can't see. Right? Let's look at the parallels in the language. He can't see because it's so dark. We live in a world with electricity. We live in a world with electricity. It's inconceivable to us how dark it can get at night in the country, in a place with no electricity. And you're not going to light any candles in a place like this either, because you could end up burning up an entire storage house of grain. So first of all, what we have here is which is, as I said, a redemptive phrase. The man trembled. What happens with Yitzchak when he realizes that he gave the bracha to Yaakov and not to Esav? What does it say? He trembles very greatly. What does Yitzchak do? Vayilafet means he groped, right? He can't see. So what does he do when he's not sure who is in the tent with him? What does he do? Sorry. Yaakov is afraid. Perhaps my father will stroke me. What does Yitzchak indeed do? He calls Yaakov over and he says, Gishan nava amushcha b'ni. Draw near to me and I will stroke you, my son. Hataze b'ni Esav imlo. Are you my brother? Are you my son Esav or not? What happens here is the man can't see. He senses the presence of someone at his feet. He's shaking, right? He, you know, taps, you know, touches, gropes, and he realizes there's a woman lying at his feet. And he says to her what Yitzchak says to Esav, Mi'at, who are you? Now, when Yaakov comes in, Yitzchak says, Mi ata b'ni, who are you, my son? And repeatedly, the word b'ni is used in that text, just as when she identifies herself, he keeps calling her b'ti, okay? And what happens when she identifies herself, Anochi Ruth amatecha, I am Ruth, your handmaiden, and marry me because you are a redeemer. He says, Baruchha ad laHashem biti, just like Yitzchak says when he finds out that Yaakov stole the brachot, he says, Gam Baruch Yehiyah, also will he be blessed. Okay? There's a very strong parallel between these two stories, and I don't think it's accidental. I think the parallel is indicative of something that is very, very central to an understanding of this story and many other stories in Tanakh. Very often, redemption is a function of recognition. Think about the repeated motif of Vayakel Yosef et Achav v'hem lo hikiruhu. Yosef recognizes his brothers, they don't recognize him. In the Yehuda and Tamar story, when Tamar says to Yehuda, Hakelna, recognize, to whom do these objects belong? He's the person I'm pregnant by. Vayaker Yehuda, Yehuda recognizes and says she is more righteous than me. And it's a redemptive moment. Out of that recognition is born the messianic line, right? Here we have that redemptive moment when Yosef recognizes his brothers. The reason the brothers sell Yosef is because they never really understood him or recognized him. And Yitzchak acknowledging that the bracha really belongs to Yaakov is a moment of recognition and redemption, which is accompanied by uncertainty, right? And I think what's happening here is there's a kind of moment of truth. Boaz, as righteous as he is and as good as he is and as much as he wants to do the right thing, does not recognize in himself the potential to do more to bring about the redemption of the field and the rehabilitation or help of Naomi and all of these things. He only is able to make that redemptive move and become the father of the messianic line when he is able to look at the courage of this woman and say, oh, she is willing to risk everything for her, you know, for her mother-in-law and for the restoring of her family. I have to do that too. Now, next week, Bezrat Hashem, we'll talk a little bit about the language of what Ruth says to Boaz, and then we'll finish the Megillah. Did you have a question, Shira? So I have to stop, right? Okay. Any questions?
I have a question.
Oh, sure.
I know it's two, but I think this concept that you're discussing right now is so beautiful. This idea of redemption is a function of recognition and finding that moment of truth. Like if we're able to recognize in ourselves the ability to do more.
Or in someone else.
But what happens when a person doesn't come to that moment of truth and isn't able to recognize in themselves? Like, can you think of an example when they don't come to that moment, and therefore the redemptive moment doesn't come?
I think the brothers sell Yosef because they don't recognize him. The beginning of slavery is when the brothers see Yosef as a monster, when he's just a rather full of himself 17-year-old.
I feel like this is such a universal message that we can look at in our lives.
By the way, I think there's a reason for it. The reason for it is pretty clear, right? Hashem's plan is going to happen one way or another. Think of it as like, railroad tracks, right? Hashem, are you going to be the person on the train or not? Are you going to be the person steering the train or not? Are you going to be part of that redemption or not?
Well, so, and that reminds me of Esther, Megillat Esther.
Oh, sure. It's a huge motif in Megillat Esther, for sure. Revach v'hatzalah yamod la'yudim mimakom acher. Salvation will come to the Jews from another place, but you, Esther, you will be lost. It's all over the place. I mean, we could probably, you could probably write a year-long course on this book.
That really hit me. I think that's just a beautiful, because it challenges us, like you said, to find the courage to recognize
that. Courage and also to recognize, who am I? Who is this? What is the situation? Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for
there's
that.
There's also Ploni Almoni. I mean, he could have.
Yes, he's anonymous.
We don't even know his name.
We're going to get to that next week. Don't talk about it yet. We're going to get to that next week. This week we're going to talk about why don't we know this? Why don't we know this man's name? There's a hint, by the way.
Yeah, can I say something?
Just 1 second. His name is Tov.
Tov. I know. I'm supposed to
let it go.
His name is Tov. Is he younger than Boaz?
No.
Boaz is younger, so why would he think the other one would be interested in, marrying Ruth?
Plus, he says why. He says why. He's afraid. He's afraid to marry Ruth.
Uh-huh.
He's afraid to marry Ruth because she's a Moabite.
Uh-huh. And one more thing, why is it not yichud in the Goren? And isn't that a form of marriage, being alone with him, no matter what
happens? No, I'll tell you why it's not yichud, okay? An interesting fun fact, the mitzvah of yichud was established by the Beit Din of David HaMelech after the rape of Tamar.
I see, okay.
That was not usher before that. Okay.
Right, okay. Good to know. Thank you so much.
Could the Goel have redeemed the field without marrying Ruth?
Yes, he could have redeemed the field without marrying Ruth, but Boaz plays a trick on him, and we're going to talk about that next week, Bezrat Hashem. Okay, Boaz does a number on him very cleverly, and we'll see why he does that. Okay? Okay, everybody. Bye, Elisa.
Goodbye.
Okay, so I'm sorry I couldn't take the Zoom questions, but I can't do Zoom and teach at the same time. Okay, and share screen and everything else. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, next week, that's right. Okay.
We'll forgive you for that.
What?
Thank you.
We'll forgive you for that.
Okay. Oh, okay, Laila Tov. Bye.
Laila Tov, have a great week.
Thank you.
Laila Tov.